appreciate those who are here. Our item today is to talk about the budget. As I promised, we're going to dedicate this meeting to the budget. Mr. Cromar did request for me to be able to read a statement, and I agreed to let him. He has a short statement he'd like to read. So even though we don't normally have a public comments meeting, I said that I'd let Ken make that statement. And so, Ken, we're going to go ahead and turn the time over to you, and then we'll jump into the budget issues. Yeah, I'm feeling like last meeting in the fire station, so.
Yes.
You can, it's recording, right?
Okay. I appreciate you allowing me to come to the record and help us read fast. And the other one, no questions, simply just to prepare a statement. Open letters to the City Council meeting, City Council and Cedar Hills community. Today we stand in a new building built for approximately $2.5 million to impact these collections. For Pool and Recreation Center, and we have to see where those fail. Pool Real Recreation Center does not have our. Instead, the city has chosen to build a golf clubhouse, pro shop, and Lego Reception Center that is visible to see the Pool Recreation Center because Lego tournaments will look at all the angles of their plan. This building will be remembered as a monument for the misuse, mismanagement, and misleading of the citizens and the City Council by these two key Cedar Hills officials. January 23rd, 2012, Cedar Hill residents all Hensenberg filed accusations against Mr. Hildebrand and Mr. Richardson in the 4th District Court, which had found that he would have been removed from office and never be allowed to hold public office again. As per Utah State Court, Judge James R. Taylor provided a court order to, quote, order a complete copy of the accusations to the county attorney for investigation. Further action as we begin to filter it, close quote. For reasons that were clear under the law, the county attorney chose not to even investigate as required by the judge. Since then, we, Paul Swartzen, Ken Spurn, Jerry Denver, and I have met twice with the county attorney's office in hopes of understanding this rationale to provide the result of additional investigation, research, and resulting new accusations. Additionally, since the January 23rd, 2012 filing, a number of city insiders have approached us, me in particular, and confidentially provided various cases and various examples of malfeasance and unlawful activity by these two officials. Thank you to those great individuals for their respect as Cedar Hill citizens and desire for cultural and honest government. Some of their leads have led to the following new accusations of Mr. Hildebrand and or Mr. Richardson. Number one, all of the documents were not provided as required by law in a grammar request. The request of all documents discussed and addressed during the November 22nd, 2012 Special City Council meeting. Pardon me. This meeting was called to explain the city finances to the then City Council and three new council members. All appeals for the complete set of documents have been ignored. This issue is now has been taken to the newly created State Records Ombudsman's Office, which will seek resolution. If the records are not provided, this may result in city officials being required to explain themselves before the State Records Committee to address this issue. Number two, the minutes that I recorded on the November 22nd, 2012 Special City Council meeting show that all three outgoing city council members expressed dismay and repeatedly asked why they were never informed during their entire city council term of the $1.7 million the city loaned itself over the years to cover a number of golf course losses. The city manager nor mayor provided adequate explanation. How this $1.7 million understanding of $1.7 million in city loans to itself would have affected other financial decisions may never be known. Number three, false claims of upholding state nepotism law. While maintaining no records of relations, having no required paper declarations of family, the city has no required paper declarations of family relationships on file. Number four, we have secured a copy of a contract signed by the city manager with his alleged son-in-law, Nathan Kuehl. Again, for a whole lot of transparency. Again, no written declaration of relationship or any other on file that the city has required by law. Additional examples of other individuals are being investigated. Number five, the city keeps no records of free golf play, and allegedly city employees have been allowed to play for free, and some have played during work hours while being paid for work. Additional grammar response information regarding this is pending. The city's most expensive liability, this building in this area, expends hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars every year, has never made a profit, and certainly cannot justify personal recreation at the expense of residents with no record of who's playing. For free, the city, number six, the city has yet to provide a front page correction of the September 2011 city newsletter, which admittedly misled citizens to believe the golf course has been profitable, and that declaration has not been made. Paul Sorensen is preparing a document which will be forwarded to you. He hoped to have it this evening, but he will be forwarded to you in short order with the details of the proposed table that you have published on the front page, showing the year-by-year taxpayer involvement. Number seven, the final one. Another grammar requested all emails from whatever email address between the city manager and the mayor with any city council member since January 2011. The request and appeal for all emails was denied and resulted in yet another appeal yesterday to the state's new records ombudsman, and which will seek resolution. Again, if the records are not provided as required by law, this may result in the city officials being required to explain themselves before the state records committee to address this issue. In conclusion, in light of these and a growing list of documented accusations, there appears to be a clear pattern of intent to hide, obfuscate, withhold, manage, and otherwise control the city's public information and finances, and that this pattern appears likely to continue and therefore require a remedy via a higher authority. We believe that an investigation will be reconsidered at the county level, or certainly at the district court and state level, as review and analysis is performed. We also believe that this will result in the prosecution and removal from office of Mr. Conrad Hildebrand, the city manager, and possibly Mayor Eric Richardson. This storm of public disgrace and embarrassment can and should be avoided for the sake of these individuals and all of the members of the building. It is for this reason explained above, those documented in the January 23rd, 2012 Fourth District Court file, and those soon to come forward, that we publicly and respectfully demand the resignation of Mr. Conrad Hildebrand, City Manager, and Mayor Eric Richardson. For additional information and ongoing information, please see www.cedarhillcitizens.org's website of the Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government. Special thanks to our outside sources, who we hold out a continued invitation for others to provide information necessary to restore financial and ethical foundation for the Cedar Hill local government. But thank you for the honorable parts of your service. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. So obviously that's one side of the story. I'm very interested in hearing what Ken has to say. I've invited him to meet with me. But that is definitely only one side of the equation. I think you're all aware of that. So, okay, now to talk about our agenda item is the budget. So, Becky is here to go over it. Tonight we are talking about general fund and motor pool fund and capital projects. And then we'll have water and sewer and recreation next time, right? Next week. Okay. All right. I guess the budget wasn't fun enough, so.
Darn it!
I don't know, I thought it was pretty cool.
Just real quickly, Mayor, members of the council, a pleasure to give you some of the meat of the operating budget.
Conrad, can you speak into the mic?
It is really hard to hear.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure to give you the general fund which is the operating budget generally in cities. When you ask what the budget is, generally they're talking about the operating budget. A lot of the rules and regulations that you have been trained on through the leaders in towns, city council training and other things, are primarily with the general fund budget, which is our operating budget. And next time, you'll have the water and sewer, as well as the community recreation fund, which are not operating and don't have all of the regulations of the general fund budget. But you do have a motor fund budget as well. As required by state law, I guess people recognize that they tie federal budgets into our local budget. Utah State requirements are that we have a balanced budget every year. We've had a balanced budget every year, and that's the major problem for the council. You have in front of you a balanced budget. We feel that this budget is a good budget with an inflation rate of just under 3%. The budget increase over last year is just under 4%. So, and the main part of that increase is because of the recreation center classes, which have a corresponding revenue and expenditure line item, but are rated at $40,000 or $50,000. We have always had, for the past 10 plus years, at the end of the year, revenues that exceeded expenditures. Meaning that even though what you have before you are estimated numbers, some of them based more historically and more finitely, and we feel lots of confidence in it, they still are guesstimates, those numbers, both the revenues and expenditures. The revenues, we feel, are conservatively estimated, and expenditures more differently. So we feel real confident with that. Mrs. Tejero will go through the specifics of each line item, if you wish, and go through these things. And like I say, the goal is, from next time, per state law as well, is that you approve a preliminary or tentative budget. If you need some language, the mayor can share some language with you, or you can get with former council member Perry. Why I say that, some of you may not get the joke, is we're required by state law to approve tentative budgets. I mean, not the budget, not the real budget. Basically, what they're trying to say is, city, get your act together and make sure you have a budget put together by May 1st. Not that you, and you don't even have to approve a final until June 22nd, but we want you to make sure you're getting it up. Doesn't mean anything other than that. So, anyway, so that will be next time, next week. But tonight is the real nuts and bolts of the city, the operations of the city, and all that. Just to check her out and take that.
Mayor Council, like Conrad mentioned, we will be going over all the government funds today, and the local funds, the general fund contributes to the local funds, and we will go over the funds that in theory should pay for themselves, like the water and sewer fund and community recreation fund next week. So please, if you have questions about those funds that we will be talking about next week, I'd be happy to answer them today as well, since we have a little bit more time. For the general fund, we'll start with the general fund, and during March we reviewed the preliminary projections for the general fund and the capital projects fund. Some changes have been made since then, which we will cover tonight, but if you have some more questions about things that we are covering tonight, please feel free to ask them. I want you to feel comfortable with this budget, it's your budget, and so I want you to be in support of everything in it. So if you have any questions or concerns about any line item, please bring them up tonight so that we can get them addressed before the preliminary budget. Not that that needs to be, but it would help the process move along more quickly. For the general fund, the only major change since March, since the first meeting in March, was the recreation program revenue. This is for the classes, the recreation classes that will be held in this building. And at this point, that figure is just an estimate, and so we may need to change that in the future depending on what we see. But it's a $40,000 increase for recreation program expenses to cover the classes in this building and any other recreation activities associated with this building. And the expense is also $35,000 increase. Slightly adjusted since you've seen it last.
But before we go to the expense, if I may, before we turn the page, I just want to make sure that we're all comfortable with the revenue, because the expenses, which is kind of the fun part of the job, that's where we get to allocate money, is only tied to what money we have coming in. And so as soon as you turn the page and you start saying, oh, there's something else I want, the only way to get a different something is by giving away something. The only way to get more apples is by giving up oranges. So I find the best way to do this is to say, okay, this is the revenue that we feel comfortable with based off of our projections, and then you hold that steady, and then any changes from here on out are all give and take. If Trent wants more X, then he's going to have to convince us that giving up Y is a good exchange. So, does everyone feel good about the revenue page?
I have two questions then.
Please.
The first one is the property tax. What are we assuming is being done with the rate? Are we assuming that we keep the constant revenue as the county allows or state allows, or are we going to hold the rate steady with a lower
revenue? This budget assumes that the city will approve the amount calculated by the county based on revenue and not necessarily the tax rate. So it's revenue plus growth.
Is your other one on property tax tours or something else?
Something else.
Okay, so if I can just, you guys can do whatever you want. Just because we did it some way in the past, you don't have to do it that way anymore. But I'd like to explain what we've done in the past, and then if you guys want to go in a different direction, you may. I don't expect that our direction was necessarily any better or any worse. It's just, it was our philosophy, so I'd like for everyone to understand it. And for anyone listening, you know, either here or tomorrow, when you want to hear what's been said tonight, the way property tax works is that it's a little counterintuitive. In fact, it's a lot counterintuitive. The state code is set up so that cities collect the same amount of property tax every year unless someone builds something new. So the only way we get more property tax is if someone builds a home or business or something. But valuations going up and down are held don't matter, because what happens is if your valuation goes up, then your rate goes down the same amount to collect the same amount of tax. So the only way to collect more tax is either growth or truth in taxation hearing. And if someone says, well, what about during the early 2000s when property values went up? That helped the city, right? No, it didn't, because we collect the same amount of property tax whether property values go up or down. Now, that's the way in which the system's set, and the only way to change that is to have a truth in taxation hearing. And in most locations, city councils are very hesitant to have truth in taxation hearings, because truth in taxation hearings sound like tax increase, and most people don't think that they'll be reelected for raising taxes, which is true. So most places don't do it, and then you get to these places like Alpine has this year, where they're having a huge increase, and it's because they haven't touched the rate in 30 years, right? And so in many ways that seems to be the opposite of conservatism to me, because that means that you weren't having the right rate for a long, long time, and then all of a sudden you jumped the rate, and so what about all those years? You either raise it too high or you're too low or something. So based off the citizen initiatives in 2003 and what the public has told us, what we've done is we've held our rate constant, and if property values go up, then we collect a little more tax. That's the way most of our residents think it happens, and so we've decided to do that, and that means having truth in taxation some years. It also meant, as you guys know, that the last few years when property values have gone down, we've decreased our property tax. We've had a tax cut the way that it's defined by state law, and so we're one of the few cities who cut taxes at all. We cut it 3 out of 4 years. I don't know what's going to happen in valuations this year, but if we were following that same philosophy, then it would say we keep our rate constant, and if valuations go up, then we're going to collect a little more revenue, and that's going to keep us pegged to inflation and avoid large increases down the road. But if property values go down, then we'll actually not adopt the rate that's calculated by the county. We'll adopt a lower rate and have less tax there. If you guys want to have a different philosophy, that's fine, but I think it's very important to know that that's what we've done. That's how we did it, and I think that in the long term, my opinion, that serves us well because it means that you have small increases most years, and if there's a downturn in the economy like recently, then you have a rebate to people, and then you catch back up. That's very frustrating sometimes to your accountants who are trying to budget things when you take away their money, but in the long term, I think it's helped us keep our revenues on track with our expenses. So you guys need to think about whether that's something you want to do or not. I think it takes a little more guts because sometimes you have a truth in taxation hearing, but I think it's the more conservative thing to do personally.
How often have we had truth in taxation hearings over the last 10 years or so?
Well, 3 out of the last 4 years we had decreases, so we would have had a truth in detaxation hearings if the law was bilateral. But the years before that, just about every year we had a truth in taxation hearing. We had it in 2006, 2007, 2008. And then 9, 10, 11, 12, we didn't in 3 of those 4 years. Is that right? Am I 1 year off there?
Just a handful. I mean, like about half. More than normal. More than a normal city would.
Most cities do it about once every 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so have the citizens fairly understood the method that the city's been using in order to calculate the property taxes, or is that?
Well,
I know there's at least one citizen who's got a problem with it, but other than that, how would most of the citizens?
There's always at least one citizen has a problem with everything we do, right?
That's true.
It's hard to tell, right? I would say that in my experience, this is my seventh budget that I've been on the council, and I went to two more before I was on the council, and the standing room only crowd that you see tonight is a little bit larger than most of those meetings have been.
So I guess
with your truth in taxation hearing.
So it's fair to say then there haven't been a lot of complaints about.
No. Now, we've tried very hard, and communications is always an issue and something that we've even learned recently that we need to try hard and do better on. But we tried very hard to communicate this is what we're doing, why we're doing it. But because you're talking about something that's counterintuitive, then it's hard to tell people, otherwise, all those years that your property value goes up, we didn't collect anymore. And so the conversation was always, hey, if your property goes up 2% this year, what do you think is going to happen to the city's property tax? Well, I think it's going to go up 2%. Great, that's the action we took. Your property value went down 2% this year. What do you think we should do? Well, my property tax should go down 2%. Great, that's what we did. But doing that means having those truth in taxation hearings whenever there's a increase in valuations and having a tax cut whenever there's a decrease in valuations. And I don't know, in all the cities I've talked to, I don't know anyone else that's done that. That's been unique, but it's what we've done. And I think it's served us well because it helped us grow during our growth period as a city when inflation was killing a lot of cities. It helped us avoid huge increases, and it also enabled us then to be able to give something back to people's pocketbooks when times were tough that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to do.
I guess, and I don't really want to belabor this at all, and it's probably worth saying that your comment about me standing room only for those who are not here is tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah.
But still, unless I'm missing something, I'm not seeing a lot of downside to using this method of budgeting.
I agree. The only downside is every 2 years you have a new council, by definition. And so that means every 2 years you have the potential of having a different philosophy, and this philosophy serves really well if that's what you decide to do. But it doesn't work very well if in 2 years after a council took some heat for having truth in taxation for 3 years, and then we happen to have 3 out of 4 decreases, but if then at some point in time you forget that, then it doesn't serve you well anymore. Because you gave money back when no one else was cutting their rate, and then what? And so, if you're going to cut the rate when it goes down, then you need to, or if you cut your collections when it goes down, then you need to increase your collections when it goes up. And so, it takes some stamina, it takes some vision to be able to see that through. And you never know; at some point in time, you might have a council that just feels differently, maybe legitimately. So. I don't want to belabor it either, but I want everyone to know that there was a very deliberate decision made based off of the initiatives of 2003 that were approved by 70% of the public, and the learnings we had of not only those initiatives, but also I think that the people who wrote those initiatives didn't even understand the system, and so we learned a lot from that, and we learned, okay, this is the way it really works. And I think that if you were to actually go down to a conference of city council members, probably 8 out of 10 couldn't even explain that that's how it works. They don't know that that's how it works. We've learned because we're different through just our civic involvement of people in our community, but I don't want to belabor either. I just want to say, if you guys are going to change, then you need to know that you are making a change and not think that you're doing what's always been done.
Would it be helpful to have an explanation of this on the website in terms of exactly the methodology that goes into doing this, just so that people understand what the rationale has been for the last, say, 7 or 8 years,
yeah.
and therefore it could be the rationale going forward for the next 7 or 8 years or longer as well. Maybe having that on the website on an ongoing basis will.
I think it'd be great to have on our website. It's there's a pretty good topic sticky pinned at the top of the Cedar Hills Forum. Most of us just kind of look past it now because it's been sticky pinned there at the number one for forever. But it was sticky pinned because for a long period of time in our city that was a big issue, and then all of a sudden it quit being an issue anymore. But it became a big issue because all the councils before that point in time, up to through 2002, did what every other city did, and so they didn't change their property tax rate for 20 years, and so the valuation of property doubled, but they weren't collecting more money, and things got more expensive, and so they did what every other city around here does. They eventually double their property tax rate. People get up in arms because they just see that it doubles and creates this outcry, and so we did that because we learned of it. I think that we should get an explanation of that.
I do too.
Especially if you're going to continue that, which I hope you do, because I think it's the right thing. But if I'm wrong, then just know that you need to make a statement that we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. We should do that. I've listened to the forum. I think most people here on the table do. However, there's a lot of residents that don't. And
yeah.
Maybe a lot of residents will never visit the website, but at least it's there.
Well, maybe we'll put in the newsletter too. Maybe if there's a way to put it into a paragraph, then we should.
And make it detailed so it really explains, you know, what we've done and what we hope to do.
I hope it's concise.
I hope it's not concise.
I hope it's short as possible so people will read it.
And then maybe more on the website.
If you put a half page, most people aren't going to read it.
They'll just get right past it.
A short paragraph, maybe even two.
Yeah.
As long as there's enough information.
It's got to be clear.
Sometimes you sacrifice to try and make things bullet points where the reality is we should have more in detail so that people understand. And so I would lean more towards having more meat someplace, and maybe the bullet points are in the newsletter or the bullet points are somewhere, but there is a complete detailed analysis someplace where they can go to it.
Well, what I would suggest too is this. Hopefully tonight, but if not tonight, soon, you make a determination of if this is something you're going to continue or not. And then let's put in the newsletter for May. And then when we get to June and we finally get our evaluation, and Becky stands up here and gives us the news, you've already made the decision of what your philosophy is, and if it's that we decrease taxes when property values go down, then it's just, okay, well, we can't do anything about that on the revenues, we've already made our decision, so now let's go to our expenses and cut what we have to cut. And if it's property values went up, then we'll say, well, great, we know that we're having a truth in taxation, because that's what we do when property values go up, is if they go up 2%, we collect 2% more, that's how we do it.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, I don't know how you guys feel about it, if you know where you're at, but it'd be great to have that before the main newsletter goes out, maybe so we can get that article in there, and then that way when the July newsletter comes out, you're explaining what you already said you were going to do in May, and it's a lot easier. Becky doesn't necessarily like that we do that. It causes a lot of angst, and I understand it, because I'm as anxious as anyone waiting for those valuations to come from the county, because sometimes it means that you spend all this time on a budget, and all of a sudden you have to cut things because the revenue's not there. But we've also been the benefactor of those other years when the opposite was true, when, great, we were really hoping to be able to finally hire a community service director, and now we can, or something like that. So I think we've benefited more than we've hurt, but it's caused for some tough choices. So.
But from a planning perspective, it is a very difficult choice to make, because we don't know what the valuation is going to be until June. Therefore, that gives you maybe one or two meetings to discuss how you're going to find.
Yeah, I mean, typically it's been 10 or 12 hours on to decide on what you're going to do, right? I mean, we've had some of those nights where at noon of the last meeting, possibly to adopt the budget, we still don't have our valuations. And
I mean, so there's a reason why most cities do it a similar way, or handle property taxes a similar way, just for the planning perspective. I mean, if you're cutting employees in order to make budget shortfall, or property tax shortfall, then hiring them once the valuations go back up, I mean, it's very difficult as far as planning is concerned, but that's why it's a big decision, and just don't take it lightly. I mean, you need to decide whether or not you think it's fair and at what cost. I mean, are you willing to cut $100,000 as has been done in prior years in order to stick to the property tax plan?
And are you willing to raise it $100,000?
Yeah, are you willing to raise it?
I'm not always sure which is more or worse, raising tax $100,000 and having $100,000 to spend, or cutting $100,000 and having to cut from the budget. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that you advertise the truth in taxation, Utah taxpayers put a big target on Cedar Hills, boom, and they start rounding up the truths, because you're raising taxes. They don't go back to your past, you're raising taxes. So, having people communicating, having people understand, that will be the huge battle. Because
I'm sorry,
the
railroad course.
Of course, and they'll be here for the residents as well.
You still one more.
They're coming.
But if that's the route that we're going down, then it's good to have that discussion rather than not have that discussion.
Communication.
Much better have it now than after you've noticed your hearing. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stupid question. Does it cost us anything to have a truth in taxation hearing? No.
A notice.
We have to know.
Okay.
The cost of a notice. So.
If traditionally we have gone with this route, then I'm just curious as to why the budget is going the other route. Wouldn't it make more sense to create your budget based on a no change, or?
Staff's recommendation will always be to keep the budget, the property tax revenue constant.
Instead, okay.
Constant plus new growth. So what you see there, that $20,000 increase is the new homes.
Right.
And business. The other reason is because we don't know. I mean, we don't know where the valuations are. We can talk to the county and give us estimates, but really until they give us figures in June, we don't know what the property tax revenue rate will be.
So was your $20,000 increase an assumption of just new growth, or your so it has nothing to do with the valuation?
And I don't know, and so this has always been one of the hard things even for planning, is we can't even get out of the county the direction of values. It'd be nice if we at least had the direction so we knew it when we were going in our last meeting, if it was up or down. We can't even get that much.
Is that the reason that that you said a lot of cities don't go this route is because
there's too many unknowns.
Is because we are dealing with maybe 10 hours of discussion after we get the information before we.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of things. I think that planning is part of it, but I think that probably, honestly, the bigger part of it is. I don't know what the exact statistics are, but if you were to say what percentage of time in the last 20 years have valuations gone up versus down, I think you probably have maybe in the last 20 years 3 down years and 17 up years. And so if you follow this philosophy I'm talking about, you're having truth in taxation 17 out of 20 years. Now, they're very small amounts because most years your growth is, you know, maybe 1, 2, 3%, it's single digit, it's similar to inflation. It's the way in which you keep your budget tied to inflation because your sales tax is tied to inflation and your property now is also has a tie to the cost of goods and services. But if you want to be elected, then most people tell you that you don't raise taxes. I mean, look around you, how many people say no new taxes? And then no one says, No one's had the conversation of what should the tax rate be. They just want to say, I'm not going to raise them. And to me, that's really wussing out because what if you're wrong? Or are you saying that you're going to keep being wrong because you're proud of being wrong? I mean, sometimes wrong is wrong, and so you need to change it. But I think that as much as no staff is ever going to recommend to council to do this for valid reasons, and most politicians will not recommend themselves to raise taxes because people don't like doing that. It's not uncomfortable. It has the potential of making people upset. But I think it's served us well. I think over the last 8 years, we're in a better position than we were before we did this. I think our finances are stronger. Our bond rating's gone up. Our efficiency, as recognized by the Taxpayer Association, has improved. So I think it's been a good thing, but it has had some trade-offs, and most people aren't willing to do that.
Becky, when do they release that again? On what day?
Beginning of June.
Why did I think it was like later in the month?
Jim Perry and myself are probably the only two politicians I've ever met that raised taxes 3 times and still got reelected. But we had to communicate this is why we did it, and then of course when it turned around, then we were able to say, hey, we decreased your taxes. It was really fun saying that the last few years, but we didn't start doing it when it was easy. We started doing it when it was hard, and then the last few years were easy. But, you know, if you think of this philosophy, I think it's helped us during weather this recession really well in a very good light because
going
we had
forward,
been raising it going into it.
Going forward, though, you know, and most things I read say that real estate values are bottoming out. So if that's the case, then are we not heading into multiple years of probably tax increases?
Truth in taxation, yeah. I mean, people are going to call it tax increase, but really you're just doing what most people think happens. Collecting more money when valuations go up, collecting less money when valuations go down. But that's not the way the law is structured in Utah. So I guess that's the question is are you willing to have small incremental increases as defined by the state law in 17 out of 20 years or whatever the number is in exchange for being able to decrease them in the 3 out of 12, and you hear the editorials of why isn't anyone decreasing, and you guys know we're the only ones who were. But are you willing to do that? And if you're not willing to say, yeah, that was the right thing, then you should probably just go back to doing it the way every other city does and make your staff happy, make you feel good. But it takes something to be able to say, I'm willing to do that incrementally. But for the people who live here, I think that those small incremental increases are what most people expect. It's what they think happens already. It's what they expect. And in retrospect, whenever there's a large increase, everyone always says, why did you wait 20 years? Of course, no one ever says, I wish that we had had increases on these particular years and these amounts, but everyone always feels like they got blindsided by the large increase. And you see that in Alpine right now, you see that in Highland right now, and you see that other places, and you've seen it in the last couple of years, and we haven't had it because we had a different philosophy. So.
Thank you.
See, look at the housing market right now. Like Gary said, I think we are at the bottom, so I don't think there's a high likelihood that we're going to see an increase in property valuations this year. They're probably going to stay the same, if not maybe decrease a little bit, because we are near the bottom, but we don't know if we're there yet.
I mean, honestly, from a communication, from a politicking standpoint, the very best thing you could do would have a very small, minuscule decrease, so you can give a very small, minuscule tax decrease to everyone and feel really good about it. But you didn't have an increase, so you didn't have to have a minuscule truth and taxation hearing to have this minuscule increase. And it wasn't a huge drop like we had a couple of those years where you had some tough decisions, like Greg was saying, where you're cutting 100 grand from the budget. You know, I don't know that anyone's going to open up the expense page and say, I see an easy 100 grand to cut. And it's never been there. But that's what we had to do to follow our philosophy, and it was hard. You hope for a really, really small decrease, you know, 0.00001%, and then you can pat yourself on the back for giving everyone a 0.0001% tax decrease and be fine. But if you're going to do that, then you have to be willing to say, you know, next year if it increases or the following year if it increases, that we're willing to adhere to this philosophy that has served as well, or if you don't think it serves as well, then you may as well just break.
It's a gamble either way.
It is. It has pros and cons, but that's the long piece of information, but it's just it's a philosophy that we've had, and I believe in, and I've somehow convinced enough other people believe in to make it happen, but I don't even have a vote anymore, and so I'm letting you know why we did what we did. But
so I have a couple of questions or points, I guess. The first one is, one of the things that we need, this is the one number that I think we can play with the most, and we need to balance it with the level of services that we get. If we can lower this number without lowering the level of service by maintaining an acceptable level of service, then we do residents a favor by having them pay less taxes. But I'm not willing to lower the level of service below an acceptable level in order to do it. And I do agree with the philosophy that you talked about. I'm actually all in favor of continuing the same model. And maybe it would be easier to avoid that 10 to 12 hour discussion on the last day of the June by saying, let's lower that number to 600,000, figure out what we're going to cut, keep a list somewhere saying here's the things that we cut in the order that we cut them, and then it's probably going to end up bigger than 600,000, and we just start putting them back in the, you know, in the reverse order that we cut them. It helps us understand what's important, what's not. It helps us communicate to the residents what's important and what's not. The least important things are the ones that we cut first. And I think it better communicates our philosophy. I think they'll understand better what we value and what we don't. And it's not just a whatever. I mean, we really consider it. We're going to have that discussion anyway, unless we get lucky and it turns out that the estimate that we have turns out to be just the right amount, which almost never happens. If we're lucky, it's more, and we can just start throwing things in. But I think if we practice tightening the belt, then I think we end up doing ourselves a favor.
You need to know your last 10,000 or last 100,000 in, and your last 10,000 or your last 100,000 out. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think again, communication is crucial. I don't think staff wise we received any emails or any phone calls. Thanks for decreasing our Excel. So I don't think the council received any unless they were told directly. And because the unique nature also of property tax and the fact that we have the golf course bond on property tax. When we cut it, and I have heard, yeah, but you're still the third or fourth highest in the city, or in the county. And then you say, look, we chopped off some property tax for you. Well, they don't understand that the property tax then constitutes 19-20% of their overall property tax bill. So we may go down, but other taxing entities may go up, and their taxes may go up, even though ours are down. So they say, what are you talking about? My taxes went up. They don't look at the line item.
Well, and like you said, just that's your dollar amount, because you probably pay five or six times more in utility fees than you do in property tax in the city.
So so that communication, so even if you do it, and you're thinking, wow, we're doing a favor. I mean, we have this plan, this philosophy to do a favor. If they don't understand that and know how to look for it, they're not going to say, oh, thanks. If you start raising their taxes, they will know. Because truth in taxation forces you to know. Because the Utah taxpayers threw that legislation through and created a huge documentation that you have to print it on a newspaper with local circulation like 3 weeks in a row. So,
but part of that communication is it may be worthwhile after the fact saying, this is how your property bill, property tax bill, was split up before
and after,
and show, because oftentimes it's the school district that represents the largest proportion of that tax bill, and if they go up, the bottom line is going to go up, and the city has almost nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's that communication.
But people don't understand that. You're right. They look at the bottom line, and they come to the city and say, well, what's going on? And let's tell them right now what's going on, because it's the same answer year after year.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone votes yes on the Alpine School District bond increase, and you'll see that next year. And
it's the government that raises the taxes.
That's right. No, it's not just the government. It's the city government.
It's a huge communication challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's having people understand. A lot of them don't.
So it sounds like no matter what we do, we need to make sure, like Jerry said, the details of things on the website, something short and sweet in the newsletter, and then we put it in the newsletter every single year.
I think we should.
I think it's the time.
Okay.
So are we done with the property tax? I have a question on sales tax. We're done with property tax.
I'm done with property tax.
It's a big deal.
I mean, I guess the only thing I might get is
it's a big deal.
If you guys know how you feel, then let's just decide now if you need to think about it because you've never thought about this, and that's fine. But I do think that if we're going to continue on this path, make that decision, move forward. And if you're not going to continue down that path, make that decision, go forward. Just own your decision, and we need to make it soon if we're going to communicate it. So, do you guys know how you feel?
I actually would just like to hear from Becky. I know from a budgeting standpoint, any other reasons why you think the other way is better?
Well,
from the budgeting standpoint, when values go down. I'll tell you, we've never had a city council complain when they got more than they were expecting. But that only happens like 17 out of 20 times, but 3 out of 20 times when we make their life very difficult, they don't necessarily appreciate it.
But this comes back to the service level, and if the cost of services goes up, and you need to maintain that level of service, then we have to change the rate in order to reflect that.
It is difficult to choose what that perfect rate is that you're going to stick with for the rest of time. So because sometimes your expenses don't necessarily tie exactly to the revenue, the offsetting revenue that you receive through property taxes. And sometimes you do need to adjust it because that's the only form of revenue that you can adjust unless you set fees or raise some other tax.
And this decision was probably a bigger deal to us before we had any point of sales tax, and so the property tax was a much larger percentage of our revenue. I still think it served us well. But.
So just a quick question. So basically what we're doing is keeping, when property taxes are fluctuating, I mean, we're keeping the same rate. We're not increasing it. So it's not like we're doing necessarily a tax decrease. It's just that we're not increasing to what the county says.
Yeah, so when values go up, property tax revenue goes up. When values go down, property tax revenue goes down.
That's what we're doing, or
that's
we have been
that's
doing.
That's what we have been doing over the past is adjusted based on
growth, meaning new growth, new homes, not increase the value of existing homes.
And can be adjusted through truth in taxation when deemed necessary.
But what I'm asking is, our rate then is just not fluctuating. We're keeping the same rate.
Yep.
Keep the rate constant, and therefore valuation is what affects how much revenue the city collects.
Okay.
Not the rate.
Okay. Whereas most cities decrease their rate every year because the valuation goes up every year.
Or increase the rates when the valuation is
Or, down. Yeah, those few times when you have an experience like we have recently, then the opposite's true.
So all other tax revenues work as you would expect them to work. The rate stays constant unless you change, approve a change in the rate, and revenue is based on your rate, not necessarily factors.
Okay. So we're not deciding this methodology tonight. We just needed to decide it soon, right?
You can.
Well, if you're going to decide it before the main newsletter goes out, then you're going to need to decide it before the main newsletter goes out, which is before our next meeting.
Which is by Friday.
If you don't, if you don't want to decide tonight, that's fine.
Jenny, I can put her up.
And maybe we should have been clearer on this discussion way back when, but it occurred to me that this is something that I'm not sure that I know that most of our residents didn't know about, so I wasn't even sure if you guys knew about this. I knew. I mean, we've gone through this, but that's just something. So,
you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I feel like I'm beating this horse to death. And so,
get up.
Just to, I'm just thinking about this from an economic standpoint, and I see real estate values in an escalator fashion moving up as opposed to moving down. And so, if that's the case, then we're going to be increasing also.
You're going to be keeping your tax rate the same and increasing your collections year by year.
And so by increasing our collections, then each homeowner is paying a little bit more, right?
Yep. If your home went up 1% in value, we're going to keep the rate the same and you're going to pay 1% more in value.
Right. And so obviously some people are going to view that as a tax increase.
Uh-huh.
And so that's additional revenue to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Which may need to increase its services, it may not need to. And so, is this something that on a given year, when say property taxes have increased, and so our revenue coming into the city has increased as well because we're receiving more from the homeowners. In that situation, could we say this year we don't need that additional revenue and opt out of this methodology?
Oh yeah, absolutely could. Yeah, and we did have, was it 2 years ago, our decrease, we didn't decrease the full amount because it was right that the SAFER grant and our public safety costs were going up and we lost the transfer revenue from doing the transfers, and so we did not decrease it as much as we otherwise would have because we said, look, we've had some specific things where we've opted into higher level service in Cedar Hills and that now has.
Okay, and that
so I think, you know, to Scott's point, this isn't pixie dust. You know, it doesn't solve all the problems.
Right.
It's just part of it. You still have to do zero-based accounting. You still have to keep an eye on level service. You still have to look at labor and benefits costs because that's a huge part of your expenses, both in terms of each employee and how many employees you have. You still have to do all those things.
Right.
But this is just one more tool that says, and here's a way in which everyone expects that when the economy does well, we're going to collect more sales tax, vehicle tax, care tax, franchise tax, and we're also going to collect more property tax. And everyone expects when we have less sales, and all those things are going
to happen. Well, that's good to know, because I was under the impression then that we were tied to this methodology completely, so that if, let's say...
No, it's a philosophy, not something in stone.
Yeah, but my point is that, let's say there's a 1% increase in property taxes, that we have to increase our revenue by 1%, but you're saying that in certain years you didn't do that.
Yeah, well, I mean...
So it was actually the reverse. Property taxes went down, and yet you still didn't maintain the percentage is what the...
Basically what happened is we had 20 years of history with no increase, and then a city council who said, look, we're not a semi-rural community anymore, we're a suburban community, and so
we want our roads paved, we want sidewalks, we want these things in our community, and that has a cost. And so the council said, well, we haven't collected any more dollars in property tax for a long time as far as increasing valuations, but homes don't cost $70,000 here anymore. They now cost $200,000. And so they did the same thing that these other cities around us are doing this year, and they had a large increase. And the usual suspects were concerned about that and had an initiative drive. And, of course, if you can't get an initiative to pass by telling people you're going to lower their property tax, then you're not doing a very good job. And that's the easiest thing in the world to pass, right? So people passed it, and then it was right after that I was elected. And so it really came down to I'm all for lowering taxes, but I think that you have to start with fair is fair. And as Scott said, what's your level of service? And then design around that. And we had people who seemed to say, well, we want all these great things, just like happens in our federal government. We want all these great things. We just don't want to pay for them. And so we had a very hard period of a couple of years where we got rid of lots of things. We had no fun things anywhere. And we said, well, if we want to really be that city, then here's how we're going to get there, and here's how we're going to avoid this public outcry. Is we're going to do this incrementally, and over time we're going to have this philosophy and this avoids huge increases. And so it was something that we worked on over time in order to try and be what we felt was fair and accomplishing the goals that we felt that the residents in the city wanted us to accomplish.
Yeah, I feel good about it this year. Next year may be a different story depending on how real estate is, but this year I feel good about this.
So the challenge is that the philosophy itself, if it's one-sided, where keep the philosophy when rates go down but don't increase when the rates go up, then you end up eventually having no property tax.
Yeah.
Because every year you're going to have some fluctuation, and the philosophy works best when it goes both ways. You're willing to have the truth in taxation when the property taxes go up. We've done that several times. We know we've had a lot of experience with that. We know what when it's a little amount, we know how much the public cares. We've seen other cities where they do it a lot, and we see how the public cares. And it's not that I don't care about raising taxes, I do care about it, but I think that the philosophy, either you adopt the philosophy or you don't, and you adopt another philosophy that maybe works a little differently. But
and I guess my point is this, I hear what you're saying. I think this year is probably going to be one of the easiest years to adopt the philosophy. The hard thing is going to be if you see a big change in property values one way or the other.
Right.
Because you're either going to have to cut a lot or you're going to have to raise property taxes a lot to keep up with it. I mean, you can see if you go back on budget, just a few years ago, we were collecting $100,000 more in property tax, but we were also collecting $100,000 less in sales tax. Thank goodness we got the commercial development, or it would have been even harder than it was. But,
okay.
I have a question about sales tax revenue. Does that reflect estimated revenues from the Hartz establishment?
It does have a little bit of increase due to growth from the commercial district, but
it seems like it's an underestimate, or
is that still
conservative for sure?
Certainly conservative.
It seems like very conservative. I expect them to bring in more.
I guess I would have to find out a little bit more information on how much sales tax a gas station brings in. As you know, we only receive half of the local portion, which is 1%, directly that's generated within Cedarville. The remaining half is the state pool. And that pool is distributed based on population.
Okay.
It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be as significant as you are thinking it is.
Okay.
It's probably going to be, it's significant, I just don't know to what amount.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we have a pretty good estimate of it, because, again, with sales tax, we really don't know what we're going to get, and it's easier to underestimate, but if you grossly underestimate, then you end up with this huge surplus at the end of the year, and like what we could have. If you overestimate, then you get to the end of the year like, what can we cut right now in order to keep in balance? So the closer we, the better we can estimate, I think we're better off. That's the challenges.
We will know what we can predict for the budget year, but right now I just don't know how much money we'll be able to bring in, how much sales tax per month is probably right.
Okay.
And that one includes point of sale, it's also right.
Only point of sale.
Is that only point of sale?
Well, right. Because the population. Are you talking about what parts impact on that number?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
so
everything. I mean, whether Walmart, Hart, anybody else. I mean,
it's both.
That's both our point of sale and our population based.
That is lumped together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so
because we only get it lumped together.
Okay.
And in fact, it's a violation of state law to tell anyone what your point of sale for any business is.
Right.
So if someone says, "How much does Walmart bring in?" If you know the answer, you can't say it.
Right.
And the reason behind that is that they don't want cities playing against each other on recruiting.
They never do that.
Of course, everyone knows how it plays into your budget, so it's kind of like the elephant in the room, but yeah.
The part that contributed from the state goal is the majority of the profit or the sales tax revenue that we receive. The point of sale portion is a very small part of our sales tax budget.
Yeah, we don't get much point of sale. We have very little commercial.
Right.
We just have more than we used to.
But I can compare a report to council and also information, but I can compare it to
what
kind of
figures
they are looking for our
commercial.
Alright.
Like the same way you do a stool from the grill
so
you can sit down?
You can just grab a chair if you want. I'll go get you one if you'd like.
I'm
sure.
They might want me to go so I don't bring up another dead horse topic, so.
Well, we are on the...
I need a diet coke while you're in there.
I'm
okay, I'll be right back.
Wrong character, grab one.
Wait, I just like a good break for points.
Okay, let's take a quick break.
Oh, we're taking a break.
Okay, diet coke, I'll be right back. Do you want any orange in yours?
No.
Lemonade?
Okay.
Just diet coke.
Who's ready to go?
We have your chair?
Yeah,
okay.
Building permit, how many number of homes was that?
The building permit number is 20
and 1. Okay. I would like everyone to just notice 1034-450. That pays some of our public safety costs with the fire department, but not all. About a third of it.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
That's a good question. The use of the class of road funds in the miscellaneous revenue section, that is the use of the class of road funds collected in prior years and being used in the current or the current budget year.
So if you don't use them 1 year, then they go into a savings account, and then if you use them the next year, then you pull them out of both categories. And so you can imagine that you might save up some of your road funds in order to go do a large road project, like an overlay. And so you might do that this year and use some of your prior year savings, and the next year you might not spend all the money you collected in order to be able to do that again in the future. So there was a number of years when we had brand new roads, we didn't need to do much to maintain them, so we saved them. And now we're at the point where they need some rejuvenation in order to keep their lifespan, and so we're spending that money that we saved in the past now.
I mean, we could say Class D road funds reserves.
instead of use of. Would that make more sense? No, I mean, you're looking at this for the first time like a resident outside. I mean, if it said reserve, because the difference between the two line items are the first.
We'd always lumped it in, so we just had them separated out. So it's really not that it was zero, but it was.
I see.
It should actually, we should probably label decisions survey instead of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you'll see it every 2 years. But that.
Thank you.
Actually, another question about that. I'm just thinking we use like an output company to do that.
Yep.
Do we know that this is the best price, the best company to use?
We look at different people doing it. this as a professional service. We're not required to take lowest bid, but we should take the best service. The group that does it, Dave's Battle Force Group, this is what they do. They create statistically accurate surveys, make sure that the questions are not misleading, interpret the results. We could do it for a lot cheaper, especially if we didn't hire a statistician to do it. It'd be kind of hard to tell him that we want him every 4 years and do it ourselves every 2 years. I'm not sure that he'd be happy with that, but I think it'd be worth looking at other groups. But I also feel like what we don't want is to spend half as much to get something that's really not useful or winds being pseudo useful because we think the results are significant and they're statistically not significant, and so you make bad choices off of fallacies.
Well, that was my next question. Because I've never been involved in this before, do we use that document heavily in order to influence decisions? Yes.
You should.
Especially in the past, it's been so
helpful. Well, I mean, I guess what I'd say is we should get you a copy of the last one if you don't already have it, because you should be making decisions based off of it, and I think that most of the council has, and
it's all in the back of the budget document.
It was in that, new council orientation.
Yeah. So you should use it, and so what we've done is in this survey, we try and keep the questions constant so that you can baseline them. If you change your questions every time you do it, then you have no baseline of trends. And so that's the big thing is we take changing questions very seriously. Even though we might sit around and say, oh, I wish that this was worded slightly different. Well, if you worded slightly different, then you can't compare it anymore. And so we've used it a lot on decision making.
Is that part of what he does too, is compares to past years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are all strengths.
Compares to past years, compares by location in the city, by income, by how long you've lived here, by age, by size of family.
By your location and where you're at in the city.
Yeah, I mean, he does a pretty good job of painting a picture of what people think and even targeting down to where there's outliers so that you might say, hey, you know, there's a part of town who really would rather dirt roads. Then there's a part of town that would rather pay twice as much money for pristine roads that they could rollerblade on every day of the week. And so you can then say, okay, well, how much should we spend on roads?
Do we post a document on the website as the decisions document? I know it's in the budget.
We used to have it.
I would have to check. I was at the council meeting. It was addressed at council meeting. The document
we typically put the summary. So there's like a summary, which I think is like, what, maybe 20 pages? And then there's the whole survey, which is like, two rings, right? And so I think that we always posted the summary, but not the two ring size.
Summary, and when you posted the budget document, the entire survey is included in the agenda packet for the day that it was presented.
But we could make a new menu item that's just that. Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to do is post the summaries for each of the years on the website as decision documents with a little star at the bottom of each one saying, if you'd like to see the full document, come to the city offices, because most people aren't going to do that, especially when they see it's 1,000 pages and they'll be like, kidding, the 20 pages are great. And it's actually, the 20 pages summary is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really need to see the whole thing. Where is this?
The other line item under general.
Oh, yeah, okay.
1040/350.
Okay.
Sorry, the insurance premium, there's an increase for insurance, and that's due to the rate increases. Our property insurance premium estimate is significantly higher than it was last year. As far as mayor and council expenditures, there aren't any major changes, small changes based on
It took me like 9 to figure it out. I think I might have got a flash. Oh yeah, bye.
And these all depend on the city's compensation plan. In general, the benefit package, benefit package will be cut by over 40,000 per year. The salary plan is created by using an independent study, and so wages are just based on not only the market, but also in addition, they're also just not based on performance. And in that maximum performance increase budgeted is 4% for each employee. But again, the actual amount paid depends on the employee's performance.
Becky, did you say all benefits are going down?
Well, no, the benefits package assumes that this budget assumes that the benefits package is cut by over 40,000 per year, meaning a benefit that employees currently receive, they will no longer receive, and that cost is $40,000. The cost of benefits, however, increases every year for a similar benefits package. So Utah Retirement System's rate increased from 13.77% to 16.04%. This is something that the city is required to pay since the city participates in the Utah Retirement System. Other benefits that increase are workers' compensation and FICA taxes, of course, are the same. But then insurance is always, the cost of insurance has been increasing over the last few years just to changes in legislation. And so this budget assumes the same insurance package, but there has been a change in the benefit package being reduced, which was cut from the tax cut.
Okay, I'll have a question later on, so I just wanted to kind of clarify what that line was for, but I've got a question later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so next, we're going to be
materials and supplies, there was a request
in student subscription and the education training just to do the fact that they're going to be in the corner. $10,000 in student election expenses was the result of no election during the budget year. The finance department, you can see that HR assistant wages that were transferred from the administration. And then some small adjustments for supply and training. Public safety.
I should ask one quick question before you go on.
Yeah.
On 10/50/150, the 15/5, what is that for? Why was there so much of an increase on benefits?
Oh, employee benefits? Really, well, benefits depends on a few factors. Insurance is based on your age and also based on your family size. And so previously, the finance department
changed the way that they allocate revenue. Before it was property valuation based for fire and it was property value based on fire and property based on fire population based on EMS. I can't remember which of the two.
Yeah, property value on fire, population based on EMS services.
And that changed to mostly population based. So pretty much all the property value base was taken out of it, which affected us the most, which is most of this increase.
I know if you last week you explained this, but I can't remember. Explain to me again how we've gone from 2010 to now.
Okay. So, back in the day, first, before I do that, let me just recognize that the next line item, police service, is a wonderful relationship. We really appreciate our relationship with AFPD and believe that it's mutually beneficial and I think fair to both parties, and that's a wonderful ongoing thing.
I have no problem with that line item.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something nice before I... Okay, so many years ago, we made a decision to transition our fire department from being a volunteer-based fire department to a full-time fire department. And the reason for that is simply response time. I had an incident about a decade ago where we needed an ambulance in the middle of the night, and I think the first responder got there in about 20 minutes, and the ambulance was there about 20 minutes after that. And so... that's the way it is when you ask people to listen to their beeper and show up. And luckily, it didn't impact anything life or death for us, but brain cells start dying in about 5 minutes. And so you can imagine that waiting over a half hour is not a good thing. And the people of this area decided that we were growing enough that we wanted to have a full-time-based department. And so there are quite a few grant programs available through the federal government. They're primarily called SAFER grants. And SAFER grants pay for a portion of the cost of fire personnel for a period of time. And our particular one was an 8-year period that started out at like 95% of coverage. It was like 95, 95, and then it decreases to at the end. It was like 10, 10, and then gone. 100,
actually. 100? Yeah, haircut provision down.
Nearly everything to nothing.
So that's what this reflects then.
Well, not just. So we knew that that was going on, and that was something that we knew that we made a decision to go full-time, but we knew that it would have a future expense. And at the same time that that SAFER grant program was winding down, so we weren't getting Fed dollars anymore for our fire department, another occurrence that happened that was also significant, and that was that in the past, LPPSD, we have paramedics, which is higher than EMTs. EMTs, there are various levels of EMTs, but a base EMT puts you on a stretcher and takes you to the hospital. And a paramedic is almost like a nurse practitioner. They can administer certain life-saving drugs on the spot instead of having to get you to the hospital to have those drugs. It makes a big difference if you're having something like a cardiac arrest or a stroke. I don't have a paramedic. We had paramedics. And the way in which that was relevant is that American Fork Hospital has transports, and certain transports require a level of care to be able to be provided by the transporting personnel. And because we had paramedics and everyone else around had EMTs, and we got the transports. When you do a transport, you collect an income for that. And so we received quite a bit of money from transport fees, hundreds of thousands a year. Well, not having anything to do with Utah County, but in Salt Lake County, where you have private ambulance companies coming in, like Gold Cross, understandably, some of the cities there were upset that they would have a hospital in their jurisdiction, they'd have to provide certain services to that hospital, but then they didn't have any offsetting revenue because a private company would come and get the low-hanging fruit, collect the revenue, but the city was left covering the expense. So legislation was introduced that said that the municipality that in which a hospital has located has first dibs on the transports for that hospital, and only if they decide to allow anyone else in does it happen. And so American Fork Fire Department went out and got their paramedics and took away the transports. And so we had those two things happen all at once, which was lost the revenue source, lost the grant money, and then just last year changed the funding, as Scott said. And so it's really three things all at once, that one of which we knew was going to happen, two of them which it was impossible to have predicted. So that's how we got from paying, honestly, very little. I think if you go before that, it was even less than that, to paying quite a bit on an absolute basis.
So is the fire services expenditure at this point going to be relatively stable, or is it going to exponentially keep rising?
Well, so the transportation thing's not going to change. The funding thing's not going to change. The SAFER grant's not going to change. So none of those items are going to change, and we have full-time personnel. So the only way in which you would expect that to continue is if you made other decisions or had other events that somehow materially impacted that, either known or unknown. So we decided to put six people in every station instead of four. Yeah. If all of a sudden the state came in and said that every municipality, no matter the size, has to have some sort of coverage, and yeah. But really, we think we're stable.
Okay. I mean, I guess my point was more to the point of our relationship with Lone Peak Safety District is, and we had an increase this year because it changed our relationship, but my question is more to the point of, is that relationship, are we comfortable that relationship won't be changing again with Lone Peak?
No.
We're not comfortable with that.
I'm not comfortable with that. You know, our districts make sense when everyone saves money being in them. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're giving up local control in exchange for economies of scale. And as long as you feel like your economies of scale makes up for your lack of local control, then you do it. When we were paying the 2010 rate, that was absolutely worth it. When even at the 2011, in retrospect, the 2012, by the time you start getting up to 2013, we're nearing that point where local control could be had for the same or relatively similar cost as the district. And yet, at the same point in time, the member of the district with three votes, three out of the, what is there, seven votes, so almost half the votes, still feels like Cedar Hills is not paying their share. So I don't know how stable it is. I mean, it's every 2 years you have new council members, new board members, could change. But I think we have a great relationship with the other city that's our same size, with Alpine, and we have a lot of same interests. We both seem to value the same level of paramedic service, but Highland, at one point in time, seemed to want a lot more than everyone else. Now they seem to want a lot less than everyone else, and there's a lot of to and fro there, and so it's hard to say, Councilman Sherman. I'm not ready to say that there will be a change or there should be a change, but I think that we need to keep our eye on that and make sure that we're getting that economy to make up for the lack of local control. And that's why I had such nice words to say about this next line item, is I think that's an example where it is great. But it is very mutually beneficial to both entities. But on fire, it's maybe not as much as it used to be. It probably still is to some degree, but not as much as it used to be. And at some point in time, the council might decide that it's no longer worth it.
So I think at some point we probably need to have a further discussion as to what would be most beneficial for our support.
Yeah, and I'm happy going into more depth with any of you one-on-one. That's probably about as far as, obviously they'll think you're very sensitive.
Right.
People get their feelings hurt very quick when you have open conversation that people in other cities, and so I'm happy to share a little bit more freely my thoughts in a way which we don't risk hurting someone's feelings.
Okay. Mayor, I'm not sure if I caught it after dinner. We also went up to four-man coverage.
Oh yeah, I forgot that. That was
last year.
Yeah. Yeah, back when we were paying $200,000, we were paying $200,000 to have someone come from another city to our city. They were full-time in another city, but we didn't have anyone staffed here. And now we do have, as you know, four people. Yeah, that was the fourth major event. And that was one that we decided on. So, thank you. We're definitely getting a higher level of service now.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it.
And I think it's going to 4-4-4 was definitely the right choice, but it's had a cost too.
Maybe I can say the level of service, the level of care is probably the same as the response
time is significant.
Dramatic.
2 minute instead, 12 minute responses. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to mention, because it always comes up, I think all your guys are trained in CPR and advanced first aid, and some carry defibrillators or other things. I mean, their response, police are usually the first on the scene, I mean, generally. And American Fork is very, very good at emergency responses, and that's the majority of what we have to help with medical responses. They did a great job of that.
Like I said, we're very happy with what we have.
Mm-hmm. As far as the building and zoning expenditures, there are some salary and benefit changes. There were some wages moved over from the administration department since we're expecting more building during the next year. And revenues cover the cost of the building department. All the buildings don't start.
Question on that one. So this says that the permit fees are covering this. Does that mean that how many, and you can use a fraction if you need to, how many people does that represent? Does that represent one full-time person, half a person? So that's changing from last year where maybe it was half. Okay, thanks. And the permit fees are covering that entire cost. The permit fees are covering that entire cost.
Permit fees and plan check fees.
All the fees.
All the zoning fees cover the cost of the building.
Okay, so property taxes aren't subsidizing any of that department right now. Excellent.
As far as the public department, there is a decrease in supplies. changes to the compensation plan. There is some additional payments requested for increased use of the public works building and adding the generator maintenance. Actually, the generator maintenance was just moved from the account below it to open equipment. And so those that will represent the increase of $1,000. The street department, there is a new account, street light maintenance. The city recently took on the role of maintaining all the streetlights in the city, or at least the majority of them. Previously, Rocky Mountain Power was doing that for us, and they were billing us per light per month. And so, as we've taken on that role, there is a new line item to cover the cost of the expense, and also the streetlight operation will only include the electricity expenses.
So, question on that. So, it looks like the operation went down 10,000, but our maintenance went up 20. So are we, in essence, saying it's $10,000 more expensive to do it ourselves?
The first year that we were at first, it's going to be more expensive because there are a lot of maintenance projects that they would like to perform in order to get all the lights where we feel they need to be. But also the cost of electricity goes up, and we are hoping that after this first year, as far as light bulb payments, there was a change that was added after the memo was published on the website and distributed to the city council. There has been a request for a concrete lifter, which would increase the sidewalk budget by $10,000, so it would be $50,000. And that would be paid for with the class two fund. As far as solid waste expenditures, our contract with waste management we have a contract with them that there is a consumer price index adjustment as well as a fuel price adjustment, which constitutes a $10,000 increase. Park supplies and maintenance, we are a contract for park maintenance increased, but I think that there are some other small park maintenance projects planned, and that is a $10,000 increase. Community services, like I mentioned at the beginning, there are some new classes that will be offered, and most likely all of them are linked, and also some additional programs such as the labor league. And so we are projecting a $35,000 increase in expenditure, which is just a rough estimate at this point.
So the total for that quick on printing is different, right?
Becky, on the on the employees on the community services, is it one full time and one part time?
One full time and one part time employee have been funded in the community services department.
And so
to run the recreation program, such as the and recreation program.
So where, yes, so the grill, where does that?
The grill and the, like the recreation event center manager, or whatever that was just now called, that position will be funded through the community recreation fund. That's where the revenue is recognized for the grill and for the event center.
So everything related to the center will go under community recreation then?
Everything related to the grill and the event portion of the center. Any like
the golf course will still be separate.
The golf course will be a separate department in that fund. And there will be still the recreation program expenditures in the general fund for classes offered similar to like the sports program. So anything like karate or yoga, that expense will be recognized.
Okay.
So, I was going to say, so where is the community recreation portion of that in this?
So it's just included in the recreation program budget. There's an increase of $35,000. And the reason why it's in the general fund is that's because that's where the full-time employees are.
So is that the only reason, though? Can we move that employee to the other fund?
Well, then we have to move all the youth sports programs and all the other recreation programs that aren't necessarily... The purpose of the general fund is... Well, the purpose of the community recreation fund is to try to be able to operate like a business. So if the city has ever planned to subsidize a particular program in any way, then that expense can go to the general.
So I guess we need to decide if that's the case in our recreation program.
For example, why all the recreation programs like youth sports programs, like junior job basketball and across all the other programs that are held by the city, those programs, as far as the cost to operate those programs, pay for themselves, but we still have a full-time employee that isn't covered 100% by that.
I see.
Okay, I'm totally confused. All right, so community services.
So community services is
has our recreation, but we have like the grill in which one? Because I don't see
community
it.
Community recreation fund.
Oh, okay. I'm like, I didn't see the page.
Yeah, next week.
Okay,
oh.
I'm getting water
and community recreation.
Okay, I did get that. I'm sorry. I was expecting.
Yeah,
I was in the
department.
Department
as far as the general fund services includes youth sports. Includes the city council. Includes the family festival.
Yes.
And includes all the recreation.
Inside and
classes,
outside.
Or any other classes that are held in this building, such as gardening classes, any of those community-type classes
that
are held in this building, but they will be paid for from the general fund.
Okay. So if we say we want to make everything recreation, like we have a recreation department, which includes golf and stuff like that, we could rename those and combine those two.
You could move everything over into one fund, the recreation fund. Then you would have to split more of your business type activities, just based on how we account for the different programs. Would affect. I mean, you could put golf in the general fund, and you could put it in.
So, I guess what my question is that. Like how we structure, would it make sense that how we structure in our city is structured in our budget, or does that not?
We try to make it consistent so that it's easy for the department head to manage their budget, but it all depends on the type of activity that they're over, the types of activities that they're over. So the community service department happens to be over the event center and the grill, so they'll have the events portion of the community recreation fund that they need to manage, but also they have to manage the community services part in the general fund. So it's complicated, and
Currently the grill is not in community services?
Well, as far as who manages the grill, that person is in the community services department from an HR perspective.
Their budget is
the budget is in the community recreation fund, the grill and event center. You get a portion of the community recreation fund.
So to me, that's totally confusing. Just
yeah,
so you know, like that, and that I think that can be confusing to residents. Is that it's under this, but then it's in this, and so like, that's one of the things I would like to see that we try to resolve.
I think it's explained better in the budget document than it is in the financial statements, right?
Yeah, and it's difficult because how the departments are separated as far as employees affects our perception. But like the departments in the budget, the community services department would be any community services type activities that the residents don't think of.
Mm-hmm.
So youth sports and YCC and town festival would all fall under that. But the event center and grill, those are very profit-focused operations, and the golf course, and so those are accounted for in separate funds because it's a business-type fund.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to split that person then into the two different funds? I know we do that with another brother.
Kind of like King Solomon did?
You could, the community services director position, our employee description or the job description is youth work. The grill, the community recreation center manager, that is the grill and event center. So really their job duties are separated. How it's being treated right now in realistically, they are being split between departments, but the job positions that have been funded are in funds that they help to operate.
I just want to make sure that in the splitting of it is that we're aware of what.
I think the easiest way to solve it would just be to have the employees with those job titles and just fill job descriptions under their job title, or we need to reorganize the job position. So that's more of a management.
I get it.
Anyway, it's confusing, but it's also because you know these people, the individuals who are performing those functions right now, and with the grand opening, people are helping out from many different departments, and they don't necessarily carry the role of community recreation center manager. But in the future, our hope is that these job positions will become a little bit more defined, and they will fulfill the role of the department.
One of my concerns is that we're looking at what's in community services, and then when we go over to that one, that we're not realizing that, yes, they're all the same and that everything is covered, that we have a person that's on events. Like, currently I think the person that's doing our events or doing our bookings or over that is under community services, but then are they in the other department, and that all of those... making sure that we're aware that we have employees that we're not missing a job, you know, because I don't see the other one. So for me, it was like we're missing a job, we're missing a person here. So are we decreasing a person when we are increasing a building? And that was my huge concern.
No. So if you the employees that were funded in the current year, in our budget year, we have community services director, we have a community recreation center manager.
So do we have, so I guess maybe this is to the council, is that honestly, I don't know, and maybe this is something that we need to speak with Conrad about, is that I don't think it's realistic for us to think that the person that's running the grill can stop what they're doing while they're running the grill and show our building, and that we need to have somebody that's here that is doing all of that and over the building. So, and I don't know if that position is in it. And this is something where we might have to look at what are we going to take away to get. But if we have people coming into our building, are they doing it on where we're scheduling a booking so that that person in the grill that's over it is aware that, okay, at 3 o'clock I have a showing, I need to make sure I'm covered in the grill? Or...
I think that'll be one of the things that we'll have to keep our eye on and be strategic about is I don't think it's our intention to have a highly paid person flipping burgers and then giving tours, right? It's we expect to have some people who are supervising other part-time workers at close to minimum wage, and so that will be part of that job, I think, is figuring out how to staff this building with all of its different functions. It certainly has a golf function, it has a community service, a grill function, it has a rec function, and we're not going to be able to have full-time, highly compensated people doing all those things, but they might be overseeing people who do them. So that person that we call a grill manager, managing grill, might be more literal than we're giving it credit to. It's not Burger Flipper, it's real manager. They're over it, not necessarily doing it.
Mayor, yes. Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
Do you remember our discussion in St. George?
Mm-hmm.
And how would that play into this position you're talking about? I mean, let's say we had three women that were trying to develop business for the community rec center.
Mm-hmm.
Would it not be feasible that those women would be required to show up to show, you know, the community rec center to someone who they have been talking to about using it?
You would certainly think so.
I would think so too, and
yeah.
That may go a long ways towards accomplishing this goal of having someone there to show the community rec center.
You expect them to want to close their own cell, right?
I would think so. So I don't know if that solves the problem completely, but I think it, to a great extent, it does.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I don't think we figured all those things out yet,
right.
But I think that we know a lot of these questions we have of things that need to be figured out and figured out soon. But
were you part of that discussion, Stephanie?
Yes, and you know, honestly, just spending up the last week up here and just seeing the traffic that comes through here, and it's like we're not even up and running,
huh?
In essence, and how much time it's taking, plus just the what's busy going on in our street, you know, in the recreation department with family festival and programs starting up and stuff like that. We're busy and we're understaffed in that department. I mean, huge. And so it's a concern to me, and I don't know like where we play with the employees that if we have an event here and someone has to close the building, who's closing that building? And if we have a reception here, who's cleaning up that building and who's staying and staying around? Are we paying just like a minimum wage person that is over our building? So it's like we don't have somebody for that.
Yeah.
We're expecting our employees to hang out here
right now
if there's an event, and then they're not doing their regular duties that we need them to be doing during the week.
Yeah, I think that's where it becomes so important to get this building to its full potential with the finished basement, because then you have things going on and it supports people wearing the multiple hats. You know, the person who is, you know, maybe back up on the grill is also overseeing the basement, and so that they provide break time for each other and it's offsetting. It's going to be hard to run it, maybe impossible to run it in its current state, which is pre-production, no revenue, and lots of staffing needs. But that's where, when we get over this hurdle, I think it gets a lot easier, because you have those things taken care of where you have staff and there's a revenue source to pay for the staff. And we are going to rely a lot on employees, same way we have on the golf course traditionally. We can't have a golf director here every open and every close, but we've had trusted people who do that, and we'll just need to do the same thing here, same manner.
Well, we can also have people that have to show up at 10 o'clock in the morning to set up for a golf tournament or a luncheon or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, they can be here until 10 o'clock at night, which means they're working a 12-hour day. I mean, if we don't figure out what our staffing needs are and how
to... We have programs, recreation programs that start at 6 o'clock in the morning. Someone's going to need to be able to open the building at 6 o'clock
in
the morning.
So they're working 18
and
19 hours a day.
Granted, great when we're in the full golf season, because we're going to probably rely on golf to help open up our building. And I don't know what that staffing is. And so I guess for me, it's like we're borrowing from all these different areas, and sometimes I feel like it's unclear, and I just don't want us to miss something and then be like, crap, we didn't fund that, we're screwed.
Well, maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need to see if we can get like a recreation director that oversees the building, the grill, golf, to make sure that all those pieces are coming together so that we don't lose any of those.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, as far as this discussion goes, it's really, as Stephanie said, it's are we allocating the right resources to this?
Yeah.
And then administratively, we're going to have to take whatever the council allocates in the budget and do it the very best we can. And then I'm sure we'll be coming back to you at some point saying, look, this is working or this isn't working. And you guys are going to know what's working or not working too, but I don't know that we can solve scheduling through.
No, I'm not saying that, but I
think that we need to have that very serious discussion of, do we have the right number of people, and that might require theme out of those things, because we know how we approach golf, and we've gotten comfortable, and you know, 8 years ago we weren't comfortable, and so there was a city council that managed everything from tee times and to green fees, and that was a failure. We made some changes, and you know, I think that we're much better today, and we just need to get to that point on the rec side.
The council is managed by, you know, just nitpicking on everything, but I am concerned that we are having, like, say, like our recreation person doing some, you know, over here mopping the floor, and then guess what? Now that we don't have time to spend time on our recreation program because they're cleaning up, and
I think that we'll, you know, we'll even tonight. I know we've scheduled to talk about some professional competence issues and to talk about those things, but I agree that we want people in those positions, and the good news is that some of those positions are funded, but we want to make sure that we're not just hiring people and then have to make changes.
Yeah.
So it's a balance, because I feel like, honestly, I feel like we're behind the eight ball right now, but at the same point in time, it's, you know, it's a balance of not creating future problems, trying to hurry and solve today's issue of who's showing the building tonight. Which we saw was not, if you saw the building being shown a little while ago, it was not the facility manager, whatever that person's position might or might not be. It was someone else pitching in, and that's a good thing. So.
I think it's hard to say you're going to allocate funds for extra people without any revenue right now coming in. I mean, where do we...
Well, for me, it's hard to allocate those funds when we don't know what our staffing needs are, and we haven't explored what possibilities there are for staffing. I mean, it's almost like we've got to do those conversations somewhat simultaneously.
Well, I mean, I think we've explored them, we just haven't maybe decided, but it's not like... It's not like no one's had this conversation before, and it's sneaking up on us. You know, Connor and I have had discussions for 6 months on this issue. We just... It's difficult. It's especially difficult because we don't have just a huge payroll to go out and hire and figure out. And that's what some of the other places might do. If they build a new rec center, they might go out and staff it to the hilt and then attrit off the people that they decide they don't want. But
Provo. I mean, Provo's in the process of building a new recreation center that's like 125,000 square feet or something insane amount. And they're going to have probably 10 full-time employees there from sunup to sundown. Now, I'm not saying that we can do that, but there are some places we can.
Well, the hope is that we'll have the right revenue to support that. So.
Right.
Yes?
I tell you, in the city of Warren, which I worked for many years, they have a recreation director, and he has a secretary. They have an outdoor program director, and an indoor program director, and aquatics director. Those are the total full-time people. All the rest are hired guns. So part-time, temporary, hiring somebody, as the mayor alluded to before, the ability to manage is the key, and to have someone that is here to say, I'm opening the door. He or she doesn't have to be here. But he's hired a part-time person to be here Tuesday and at night after an event, or to clean up, or to set up chairs, or whatever. I mean, that's the management of doing that. I mean, like the mayor was saying, flipping burgers. You don't want that person flipping burgers. Could that person be in flipping burgers if need be? Absolutely. But that's not where the best, the bang for your buck at all. I don't think it's totally defined as Councilman Martinez is concerned about. Because there are those questions, because we don't have a history. But the ability to manage and identify those things as it happens and as we, like right now, I mean, I was asked, what are the hours going to be in the grill? Well, what do we have staffing for? Are they going to be from 10 to 12? I mean, probably all of you would probably, or my thoughts anyway, was it'd be nice to have it open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. or something like that to get the youth groups after their programs to get them. I mean, but do we start at 6 a.m. to 9 p.m.? You can't start at 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. I mean, you have to evaluate usage and you have to work into it. And so there are some unknowns, but you have to manage that. I mean, not dissimilar to Courtney being here right now. She's a hired gun. I mean, that's what she is. And she does a great job. Kim's not here, our city recorder's not here. Doesn't have to be here. She fills in admirably for that function. And so we don't have to hire another Kim or have Kim that work 14 hours or 8, I mean, all this, because we've handled it that way and do great through that. So that's what we'll have to do. We're coming up again. Kind of scary because we don't have the history and remember research. We don't know yet. We don't have the revenue. We can't say, God, let's overload it. But we can't overload it because we don't even know how much we're going to have to pay for it. So that's something that you have to manage and sort of.
Well, and I'm not saying to overload, but I'm saying that we have the manager in place, but we don't have a budget for anyone under the manager. So right now we're expecting the manager to do from morning to night.
So let's, can we defer the discussion to next time when we have the budget with us?
Okay.
Because a lot of that, I mean, we can refer back to the general fund at that point to reconcile it, but it seems like we're doing a lot of speculation on what the recreation fund is. And
you're concerned
about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the most important thing I hear you saying is I hear loud and clear we can't wait 2 weeks to put together a plan, but as far as the budget goes, I think you know that does come together. So we're not going to ignore.
This is for July 1. Mm-hmm. However, we have a building that opens in 1 week. Mm-hmm. So.
And there's a small amount of part-time labor in the current budget to help our current manager.
Okay. That would be my hope too.
That'd be very expensive grill.
Yeah.
Yes.
Labor. I can't imagine you hiring some of those at that rate.
Thank you. What was that?
Next week.
Probably just as vigorously, too.
The capital project fund.
Maybe just slow it down.
Should we talk about the general fund a little bit more? Should we come back to that and talk about capital project fund and the motor fund?
Does anyone have anything on the general fund? Okay. Capital projects fund, please.
Capital projects.
For 2000.
We've already discussed the revenues in March and also the expenditures, but there have been some changes since then based on feedback that I've received, and so feel free to make changes to the changes that I've added. There was a police soccer park restroom and storage facility added, and the reason for that was that we get a grant from the county for a park project, and we did not have a park project planned for this. For the 2015 budget year. This is a proposal that we can consider, but if you have a different park project in mind that you prefer, or if you don't even have to,
I think we should
do a park project altogether. But our recommendation was building a restaurant for the park. And that will be funded by $5,000 of grant revenue and
$5,000
is about over $5,000,
and then 20 from CARE Tax.
The community recreation center basement has been added to the budget for you'll notice that this expense is included in the capital project fund and is not the community recreation fund or transfer to the community recreation fund. Because, like I mentioned earlier, the expenses and revenue for the classes that will be held from the basement will be included in the general fund, which is the governmental fund.
I have a question on the expenditures. I understand for the Deerfield Park why we have that money set aside, just because it's kind of unknown. So what about the Parkview Boulevard widening? Do we have to keep having that in every single year?
We are waiting on the Harvey Boulevard widening project.
We're waiting on MAG.
County.
Or the roads go through.
Yeah.
But I mean, are we widening that regardless of Deerfield Park?
They're not related. That's based off of Harvey Boulevard punching through all the way into Highland through the train school land, which is, West Harvey Boulevard, right where the White House is by the nursery.
Okay.
That's where the widening's at. It has nothing to do with further east of the park.
So we're waiting for the county to determine whether they're
going to
do this or not?
No, it's more complicated than that. The land that's going through is training school land, which gets you in a quagmire of the state and the governor's office and the education office and the legislature. And so everyone around here knows that they want a road to go through, but not necessarily everyone not from around here knows that we want it to go through. And so there's funding in place to put it through, but the department has been acquired, and we've just been coordinating our widening with when that road becomes all the way through.
So that's what we keep having it every year, so we just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not every year. We had it last year, and we had it this year, and so it's 2 years at this point. So.
Okay.
Or it's being proposed going to its second year.
Okay.
We had thought.
I thought it was part of the year.
No, it's unrelated to that.
Okay. Those are the only two changes. There are some increases for the increased cost of fuel. And then the depreciation expense is based on the assumption that we will sell three vehicles and a bobtail. So four vehicles. And
We talked a little while ago about doing our analysis again on how long we keep each vehicle and doing it at the vehicle level, not at the pool level. Does this incorporate that analysis of?
Yeah, so what we found over the years is that that's going to be such a discount when we purchase this vehicle under the state contract. Most advantageous for the city to sell those vehicles as soon as possible. But realistically, we do need to hold on to the vehicles for a couple of years because we just can't be buying and selling vehicles every year, our entire fleet.
Why?
Well, here's the better delay in timing for when we can purchase a vehicle and sell a vehicle. Just realistically, we just aren't able to sell the vehicles as quickly as we might.
So does that apply to all the vehicles equally?
No, each vehicle is treated differently, and so we should probably do some more research as far as each individual vehicle.
So that's when
we're
like...
our vehicles are trucks, though, for public works department, so that's what we base most of our assumptions off of.
Okay.
But we do need to do more research for the other unique vehicles that we have.
But like your bobtail is going to have a better ROI than the van.
And the bobtails actually have a 6-year replacement schedule versus the 3 vehicles. So we try to treat each vehicle separately, but realistically, it's very difficult for me to sell the entire fleet in the year that we purchase it.
Yeah.
And
I guess
Decrease the property tax, if for no other reason than to force us to prioritize what's important. I would like to cut it by $50,000. No. I would make it a later point. I don't think we have time to discuss it now.
I think probably the way that I'd like to see it is I'd like to see staff's recommendation of what's the last 50 in. And what's the next 50 if Donald Trump wrote a check?
And that's going to be very difficult because we do not know what services are you guys prioritize.
No, and I realize that your recommendations aren't going to be ours, but I'm really curious on, a budget means that staff has prepared a list of recommendations based off of what they feel. So they felt something was the last in and the next first out, and so...
Again, the key is level of service, and staff knows better what level of service they're providing and what will reduce that the least. So I agree. I think that if you gave it a shot, even if we had a budget committee meeting where we can discuss it, it's probably worth that than it is to do it here as a council.
Yeah, we can come back with that recommendation. We know that we have to prioritize.
Yeah, sure.
So,
but we
don't have
to recognize it. Okay. So, I apologize. I told you I was going to have this tonight, and I didn't get a chance to do it, but I will get it to everybody. I know I got to figure out where it's going to come from, but I do think it's important that we have a communications budget.
Yeah,
and
so then that's just
what
are we
writing
at in order to
Yeah. Yep. Part of the top 50. I like about that is it kind of lets us know what you guys are thinking. Yeah, no, I think it would be good to know what a department thinks. I think it would be interesting for us as a council to know what a department thinks is important. Because you're the ones there in that department.
I mean, do you want to see my recommendation? Do you want to
I think
he's like Hartman. Staff, just like this is. I mean, this started off as staff, and you know, I've given my input, and the budget committee's given their input, so it's not purely anyone's. But we started with something called staff's recommendation, which was predated by staff's budget retreat. But whatever that means.
I have one other question. I know that there's been some discussion in the past. Is this budget based on us still keeping the maximum percentage in our general fund, or are we fixing that? Because I know we've been dinged for that in the past.
Are going to include the budget amendment this year to transfer some money from the general fund to the capital fund. We are exceeding our budget.
So that's what I'm saying. Is this budget assuming that we're going to continue to keep the whatever percentage? What's the maximum percentage?
Yeah, so to answer your question, this budget has expenses and revenues matched up, and that happens when your revenue exceeds your expenditures.
Right.
So we don't have budgeted any excess. We always budget to the expenses, we budget exactly to the revenue.
Right.
So that seeing that we get this is because our revenues exceeded our expenses or we didn't expend as much as we budgeted for. And actually, it's a little bit of both because the crazy thing about it is not only can you not spend more than you budget on the toll number, but it's by department and then even to a degree by line item. So you have to
have
not go over anything.
So that being is just because we haven't transferred
enough.
But in the past,
every year, our balance comes down. But in that, more revenue than
And does it always have to go to the capital project fund?
No.
It doesn't have to go there. You can use it in the general fund if you'd like.
You could use it right now to buy a flagpole instead of putting the capital projects fund using it next year to buy a flagpole. Or communications, but you have to spend the communications right now. So you couldn't put this year's money into next year's communication, but you could say, oh, let's send out a mailer and...
I
don't know
if I had to see out, but I wanted to give it to you guys, and I need a price right up front.
Mm-hmm. Or you can budget if you use more adventures than...
And that's a lot of what we do, is on certain expenditures we wait until the end so that we know how they're going to turn out, because if you do all your projects in July, assuming that you had all your cash in July, which is another issue, but if you did all your projects in July and then sales tax revenue was down, then what would you do? So
yeah.
So it's sometimes frustrating when you're sitting here and saying, hey, we approved streetlights to be put on this road in April, and then next year in April, they're saying, where's the streetlights? Well, maybe because they're going in on June 20th when we know that we really have the money, and
so
you see a lot of that. So,
can I just ask a favor? In the future, if we know we're getting closer to our budget year, then we're going to have to make a transfer to some fund. I mean, can we have some kind of a heads up on that? Do we normally get a heads up on that so we know where we want to put it?
Yeah, I mean, the quarterly budget updates that we do are supposed to give us an idea of how that's going so we can make changes as we go. But that is part of that. Typically, it's a June meeting, and it's trying to hurry and do things. And so I think it's a great time, too, if you have a thought of something that was the... I mean, ideally, it's the... What was the last $10,000 that we cut out of last year? And if it was a one-time thing, then let's try and put it in June and do it. Now that doesn't work so well if it's recurring things like we wish all year we had had a part-time person greeting people at the front door and welcoming to our city. But if it's an app that welcomes them on their phone, then
right. That's
a great way to do it.
So, like for example, the water fund, we had unexpected water revenue in the budget. We thought we really wanted to have a utility.
To discuss pending litigation and character and competence of an individual.
Okay, we have a motion. A second. All in favor say aye.
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 All right.
Where are we?
Yeah, what
are
we doing
with this?
What? I get it.
Break.
This is a great government recording.
I move that we adjourn executive session.
Second.
Aye. Can I get stopped? That.
Just keep going.
Is it recording this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I move to adjourn public meeting.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.